Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast's Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined at the mics by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. And this is sort of our free-for-all episode. We got to pick whatever we wanted. It's summer's end. It's sort of what we could fit in, what we've been wanting to talk about the whole time, you know. So we have a collection of titles for you.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to get started. This is Mari. And I want to bring up The Girl I Am, Was, and Never Will Be, a speculative memoir of transracial adoption. This is by Shannon Gibney. And I actually started this back in June and had to give it back. And I got back to it in late July. This is the most unusual book I've read in a long time. Okay, so at the front cover of the book, you know, you got the little entry, the copyright, and blah, 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 who published it. And this is a work of fiction. But you really get the sense that it's really what is called on the cover, a speculative memoir, maybe of nonfiction. Speculative being that there's like all sorts of storylines, timelines maybe, that didn't really happen, at least the way we understand things happening, for this woman. Shannon Gibney is an educator, an award-winning educator, by the way, who was born in Michigan, grew up in the Ann Arbor area in a family that adopted her. And she kind of takes it upon herself to investigate who her birth mother was. And this book is kind of, if you read books that have like little like walls and sliding doors, or what people call wormholes, or you can like slide into
time
a
slip.
Different alternative, you know, reality, this is the storyline here. So Shannon Gibney, I feel like I know her somehow after reading this book, but she is, you know, trying to think about what would my life have been like if I had been Erin Powers, which is what her birth name was, or what her birth mother named her. What would it have been like to be with, you know, the family of my birth origin, my aunts and my uncles. And she pieces together this kind of like this investigative journey that she's done. I mean, there's a letter in here from, you know, Child Services of Michigan that has an Okemos address on it.
Yep.
And because there was a time, I guess, I mean, I think her birth mother did not allow contact, but then eventually changed her mind. So she was able to find out who this person was and, you know, went through this process of meeting her. But I think the parent that is most prominent in the story is the father.
Mm-hmm.
The father, who was a black man in the, I want to say the 70s or 80s. She was born, I think, in 1980, can't quite remember. But her father was in the Air Force. He wanted to marry Shannon's mom, but the mom wouldn't have him. And in this book, she is constantly, you know, thinking about like the tension, the racism that, you know, was subconsciously perhaps in her mother's mindset for not wanting to marry the father, for not believing that she could have a good life with him or bring up her child. But at the same time, Shannon recognizing that she had a loving family in Ann Arbor, an adopted family. It kind of goes all over the place. I can't even really explain it. There are like what you think are actual documents. I'm going to say they're actual documents.
I think.
And they're transcribed in case you can't read them, because I had a hard time reading like some of these notes that her mother wrote, envelopes or photographs. It is just a really, really cool book. I have about 30 pages left to go in it. I want to urge you to get through all the way to the end. I don't read a lot of wormhole sort of stories, but this one really had me hooked, which is why I picked it up again after I had to give it back in June. So
I actually did read this book, and it is quite a fascinating story. And it really is, I think it really speaks to the idea that anybody who is adopted, there's their story, there's the story they're told, there's the stories they make up because they don't get a lot of information.
Right, right.
It's all of that happening in this book.
Yes, yes. And especially the longing that she has for her father.
Yes.
That just comes through. And just how happy she is once she has her own family. A family that
looks
somewhat
like her.
Looks like her, yeah. You know. Those are really interesting. For me, anyway, they were very interesting thoughts to think through.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe how much we did not necessarily plan. We don't plan the books all together, but we realized how many parallels there are with just some of the themes with the book Monty just mentioned and the one that I'm going to talk about next. That longing in particular, or that wondering what it would have been like, or you know, what would my life have been like had these circumstances not happened. And the book that I'm going to bring today is called Owner of a Lonely Heart, a memoir by Beth Nguyen. And this is the second book of memoir by Beth. The first one was Stealing Buddha's Dinner, and she wrote under Bit Nguyen at the time. And she's also written two works of fiction in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a long-awaited memoir, and it has a very strong Michigan tie. Beth now calls herself Beth, which is part of the book. Beth grew up in West Michigan, rather, actually where I grew up, just a couple miles away at about the same time. So I think West Michigan, if you're familiar with Lowell, Ada, you know, in that Fulton sort of area, sort of out in the country. Part of the story is also in Grand Rapids, more in the center as well. So there's a lot of West Michigan content, but it also goes to Boston and other places. And some of the things that Monty just mentioned are really strong themes in this book. So this is really, at its heart, a story about the Vietnamese refugee experience. And her family were Vietnamese refugees who settled in West Michigan in 1975. They had to flee the country. They fled, and who was left behind was her biological mother. And it's one of those things where this is something she knows, but they don't really talk about it. She's not really supposed to ask about it. It's just sort of like there, right? And she doesn't really spend significant time with her mother until she's 19 years old. So she grows up with her father and her stepmother and some step-siblings and her biological sister. And she talks about the Vietnamese experience, which she talked about in Stealing Buddha's Dinner, but she talks about it more now. Growing up as a Vietnamese person in West Michigan at a time when there weren't many people who looked like her or from her culture there, and what that experience was like. And then the book sort of moves around into different times, but she actually goes and meets her mother in Boston. And it's then the book goes into several meetings and it's describing sort of the feelings, the expectations of those meetings and how they're really different from the reality. And then it also moves into the present where Beth is now a mother, and she has a secure family of her own that she's there with her kids all the time. So it's absolutely a rich memoir. If you love memoir, I highly recommend this one, especially if you love introspective sort of, it's sort of almost like a quieter book, mm-hmm. and it's really deep and probing. It doesn't give easy answers. It sort of examines how this experience of not growing up with a biological mother and not really understanding the whole story most of your life, what you fill in when you don't have that experience, but also how the refugee experience and sort of the violence of the erasure of the history in that experience will affect any refugee, but in her experience, the Vietnamese refugees in West Michigan. So a Michigan story, a family story, a great book for anybody who loves memoir, that sort of probes these deep interconnected issues.
Very cool. Okay, my first book for the day is also nonfiction, also partially memoir. It's White Mosque by Sophia Samatar. This is part memoir, part travelogue, part history. It is such an interesting mosaic, and that if you see the cover, it is an interesting mosaic. This is actually details Sumiter went on a secular pilgrimage to the lost village of Akhmachet, which is the White Mosque. It's in the former Muslim Khanate of Kiva, which is now in Uzbekistan. And it was founded by a small band of Mennonites following a charismatic leader who predicted the return of Jesus Christ in the late 1800s. And it was a doomed trip from the start. It was just thing after thing after thing, but this group persisted persisted east. So Sophia grew up, she's the daughter of, she's raised Mennonite by a Swiss Mennonite missionary who married a Somali man. Her father, they ended up, he emigrated to the United States after their marriage. He never, I don't think he ever fully converted to Mennonite, and he very much distanced himself from the church later. He became a professor, but she went to Goshen, I believe, and you know, she still grew up within that culture, but she is essentially a black woman in a culture that it's just that she was the odd one out, she and her brother. And it's so very interesting to talk about, like, when there's a point where they're talking about bias training and training on microaggressions, and they're separating everybody out, and she's like kind of literally the only person in the room. it's interesting, the bits of memoir, this kind of weird story of the group that's moving across the East and settling in this place and waiting for the second coming, and it doesn't happen. And again, when you have some that kind of comes up in different religious beliefs, you have this sort of recalculation, oh, I must have gotten it wrong, I just did this the math a little bit off, but here, he'll be here next. And again, it doesn't happen again. They end up kind of in an area controlled by Russia, and that, you know, works against them. That, you know, it's just a really interesting story, and she ties it back to things going on now. She ties it back to her story and her parents' story. And she's just a really wonderful writer. This is something I actually did listen to most of, but as I do with most audiobooks, I often will have the physical copy as well if I need to go faster or if I don't have, or I'm not in the car. But this is something, it's just a really interesting, complicated mosaic, but it's so well told. Fans of Carmen Maria Machado, I think, would really enjoy this. I think from all of Cheryl's descriptions that if you've read Kapka Kasabova, as another person, if you enjoyed their work, try this as well. It's just a very interesting story. Yeah. Really interesting bit of history. It's fascinating. And the ties to, you know, people made it so far and then they're kind of like, I'm out. And then you have these families resettling in the United States, or, you know, it's just an interesting twist.
Yeah. And there's so few books set in that area. We even get in the United States. I mean, how many books do you really?
No.
No, and that's amazing in and of itself. And there's something so, I don't know if haunting is the right word, but just really fascinating about books set in that region.
And it's her culture, it's the Mennonite culture, but it's also looking at that culture and their effect on it, and even just the effect on it of having a secular, you know, sightseers come through for this is just an odd and interesting thing to really step back and look at.
That sounds like a great book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I have another young adult title. The book I want to talk about is Buffalo Flats by Martine Leavitt. And this is a historical fiction book. It's set in the 1890s in what would later be known as the Alberta region of Canada. And it's about a 17-year-old who is homesteading with her family there. They've moved from Utah and are trying to establish, you know, their community, their town. And her community is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I have to say that the area that they're in, the description that Levitt goes through is just absolutely stunning. The writing just really sparkles with a lot of beauty in that, you know, she's describing mountains and sky and these gorgeous just rushing rivers. And having been out west recently myself, I read it at the perfect time for me anyway. It's a time when, you know, everyone marries young. The people are traveling by covered wagons. You know, when you find a good horse, it's like finding a good Subaru. It's, you know, these pioneers who have a real difficult, like, physical life in that they're working really hard just to make it, just to have food to get through the winter. And Rebecca is this young woman who is really interested in acquiring this piece of land that she comes across. I mean, it's kind of like a place she goes to, and one day, or, you know, the book opens up, one day she just feels like God's talking to her. And she's like, I need to save this land for myself or for the community. But at that time, women were not allowed to own property. And she brings this to her father and her mother. You know, we have this little stretch of land not far from us. I want to buy that. And her dad's like, well, you can't. And her mom, wonderful mom that she is, really advocates for her and is like, we can buy it for her, you know, in your name, and eventually it will get transferred to her name. It's just a real expectation of, like, you can do it, even though the time is definitely not in favor of women. It was a very patriarchal society, I guess you could say, as was common during those times. And Rebecca does end up going to work so that she can raise this $480. And it's kind of interesting the kind of things that women do, becoming midwives, working in logging camps to serve the men that are in the logging camps. There's discussion of women's suffrage. It's what I would call a gentle read in that there's just vignettes, one chapter after another. We talk a lot about how, you know, it seems like young adult books these days are skewing in some ways older, but mm-hmm. this book I think would really appeal to a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, just looking for a gentle historical read that gives you insight into what it was like for pioneers. So I hope you'll consider it. Buffalo Flats by Martine Levitt. And I also want to mention that it is very loosely based on Levitt's own personal family history.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, that's very cool. Yeah. Well, I think we can go from Canada to Maine pretty easily to make mm-hmm. the segue to the next book. I was really excited about this. I had to wait a long time to get it on hold. It was it's called The Blueberries for Sal Cookbook by Robert McCloskey. Sweet recipes inspired by the beloved children's classic. And this is from the Robert McCloskey estate, I believe. But what it is, it's just a lovely little book filled with all the original illustrations, not all, but filled with original illustrations from Blueberries for Sal, from the classic children's book, Caldecott Medal winner. And it's a really great cookbook filled with blueberry recipes and lots of really good blueberry facts. One of the pages lists all of the varieties of blueberry names. And it's a little quiz, like how many of these are actual blueberry variety names, and it's all of them. And I did not know that at all. There's information about the antioxidant quality of blueberries, how to preserve them, you know, with freezing and different dehydrating, different ways of preserving. But the recipes just look absolutely wonderful. Blueberry maple pecan scones, ooh, which sounds really, really good. Moose track blondies was the one that appealed to me probably the most. Blueberry coconut cupcakes. And then there's your traditional things like blueberry jam or pancakes with blueberries, but it has the beautiful illustrations from the book and the blue and white line drawings and a little history of the book as well, which was sort of a biographical story of Robert McCloskey's wife and his daughter, Sal, is what it's actually based off of. So I thought this was a really fun summer read. We are still in blueberry season in Michigan, really timely. I'm actually going to make something out of it tonight. So just a really fun book that celebrates classic literature, but also inspires in the kitchen.
All right.
And I'm finishing up with one of those beach read summer thriller type things, and I'm coming back to Michigan for it. I want to talk about My Murder by Katie Williams. Excuse me, I'm blanking on her first name. It's Kate Williams, and she, this is her second major release. I did not read her first book. This thriller caught my eye because it is very much set here in mid-Michigan. She is from mid-Michigan. I think she was born in Lansing and grew up in mid-Michigan. And the story is set in the future, not horribly far forward, but far enough forward that there is cloning technology. The book opens. Yes, I know. Cheryl is making faces. This is a bit much. So the book opens, and Lou is married with a toddler. She is just getting ready to... the first line of the book is, "I was supposed to be getting dressed for the party, the first one since my murder." She was a young mother, and at the tail end of a string of serial murders, it was sort of the last straw for the community, and they basically decided from the outrage that a science group was able to take the advantage and say, let's bring them back. And so they clone these women and bring back every one of them. So you're starting the book after this. The women are settling back into their lives. They have everything up to the day before they died in their memories, but it's not their body, it's not their lived experience. And so they are attending a support group together. They are trying to fit back in and figure out what's going on, you know, and figure out how to handle this whole new world, the same old world, but they're the different ones. And it's, you know, it's not all fine. Things are weird, obviously, from this, but it pokes a little bit at sort of the true crime podcast popularity. Other victims is also kind of looking into the serial the murders. There is somebody who is in prison and that has been sentenced for the crimes, but she's been studying all of this, and she keeps trying to pull Lou aside and say, look, there's something odd about yours. And basically they go and visit the killer. They scam their way basically in to talk to him, and he said, since I'm not going to be able to talk to you about this any other time, I didn't kill you. Everybody else, yep, did it, no problem. But it didn't seem much to say, I did you too. I'm already, you know, going down. But just so you know, I didn't kill you. And so Lou is just at a loss, and she's now trying to figure out her own murder. Wow. So that's the intro, and that's how you're going. And it's twisty. It's a quick read. It's actually a really quick read, but it's very, Williams does a great job with the story of keeping you involved, kind of wondering what's going on. There are, you know, she finds she doesn't know who to trust, including the serial killer who she thinks is probably in earnest, but also, it's a serial killer. I mean, what do you do?
Could be an unreliable
could maybe. So it's just a fascinating read. It's very much, it is set in the future, so it isn't always overtly a Michigan feel, but there are scenes that happen around the Lansing, what's left of the Lansing Mall. And it's just an interesting, different twist in that sense, too, because it is set here.
What's left of the Lansing Mall?
I mean, it's maybe 10, 20 years into the future. It's far enough forward that cloning technology is at this
wow.
rate. So it was a well-done story. I was very, it kept my interest all the way through. So
yeah, it sounds really fast-paced.
Yeah. So, and that's our collection for today.
Yeah, that's what we got.
So go find more books. enjoy your reading.
Sit on the deck and read.
Yep.
Go to the beach and read.
Enjoy the last month of summer.
Mm-hmm. Listen, pick up a book, whatever. Just enjoy. Happy reading.